What is going on, everyone? Welcome to the Taming the Financial Chaos podcast, where we embrace uncertainty, we embrace the chaos, because we are working to establish control. My name is Matt McCoy. I'm a financial advisor and a certified financial planning professional out of Greensboro, North Carolina. The name of my practice is Principles of Financial Planning. You can find us online at principles with an L-E of financialplanning.com. That's principles with an L-E of financialplanning.com. Getting started with episode one here, I have chosen a topic that I think most of you will find applicable, but it'll also help lay the foundation for future topics and discussions. Specifically, what I'm referring to is uncertainty and control. So in other words, what is uncertainty? What are the components? How should we understand uncertainty? But also, how can what we know about uncertainty, or what we might discover here about uncertainty, help us in better understanding and establishing control? I also wanted to offer a definition or an explanation for what I think is driving the uncertainty today. And if I had to define it in one word, I would say it's conflict. Now, that might seem obvious to a lot of you, but let me tell you what I find most significant about that. When you have conflict, that means you have at least two sets of competing ideas. And if the ideas are competing, then no set of ideas has risen to the top. You know, in other words, no set of ideas can claim to be the victor. When we have a set of ideas that has risen to the top, that means we know what the path forward essentially looks like. So in other words, we can basically get a good understanding of what we might expect to come down the road for us in the future. But right now, we don't have the benefit of that. So to get us jump started, I figured I'd start things out kind of like an interview style, ask myself a question and I'll answer it. So if you'll humor me, here's the question that I'm going to pose to myself. If someone were to come to you and express concern about the uncertainty that exists in this day and age, and also maybe share that because of the uncertainty, they don't feel as if they have as much control as they'd like, what advice would you give them? You could say that there are two ways that I would answer that. One would be, you know, from the perspective of, you know, what I have time for, what I'm able to cover with a client in a meeting, and then look at it also from the perspective of what I wish I had time for, you know, to cover with a client to help someone on that issue. But if I'm sitting down with a client, then I'm going to look at it from the perspective of, you know, first of all, whether or not we've done any planning for them. And, you know, if we've done planning, especially with how our services are structured, and if a client has taken advantage of, you know, the pertinent services we can offer, then, you know, I would refer them back to that planning. And I would say, okay, let's take whatever it is, you know, specifically that you're concerned about. And it has to be specific, by the way. I think that's an important point to mention. General anxiety and general fear are not helpful, but specific anxiety and specific fear can be, because you can address those specific issues. You know, one of my philosophies, one of the things I love to say is, you know, a good solution requires an accurate definition of the problem, because you have to know what the problem is to be able to plug the hole with a solution. So if you have a general sense that can't be defined, you know, of anxiety or fear, I don't see how it's possible to address that. And I would be so bold as to say that you can't. You know, I think, you know, in this day and age, maybe more of us are familiar with the concept or the idea of that waiting for the other shoe to drop. But I mean, you could spend your whole life immobilized because you're constantly worried about what might happen. But the reality is, there are only certain things that really could possibly happen. And so, you know, but me just making that statement, it automatically introduces the idea of chance and probability. And that's an important, you know, thing to understand here. But like I said, I would refer them back to the planning we've done for them. And if we can't tie their specific concern to, you know, a certain analysis that we've done for them, you know, maybe they haven't engaged in all the services that we offer. You know, maybe we can offer to do more, you know, look at analysis a certain way, that kind of thing. But chances are good that we've already covered something. We've already performed some sort of analysis that I can say, okay, look, you're concerned about X, but take a look at the analysis we performed here. Okay. And this is how things are going to run. You know, this is when you're going to flip this switch, flip that switch, and this is how it's going to play out. So that's basically, I guess, the approach I would take in looking at control, you know, again, just from the perspective of my time that I have with clients and meetings. If I could address it the way I truly wanted to, though, I would actually try to take an approach that opened people's eyes to, number one, how much risk and chance are already involved in day-to-day activities. And I would take that and try to walk them to a place where they understand that, you know, risk and chance being involved are not by default reasons for not acting at all. You know, I think take driving as an example. There's obviously a fair amount of risk involved in driving, but the ways in which you drive can either augment or reduce that risk. And it's no different than with financial planning. Probably part of what explains our comfort with driving, even with the risk that's built into it, is that we already have it in our minds how we're going to respond to certain scenarios. You know, I mean, you think about it from the perspective of control. You have your hands on the wheel. You've got the gas and the brake pedal. You know, those are the instruments or the toggles you need, you know, to be able to navigate different situations. And it's real simple. You know, somebody slams on the brakes in front of you. Well, chances are good you're going to have to do the same thing, or you're going to do the same thing, you know, whether you think about it or not, just to avoid the I guess, possibility or the inevitability that you're going to run into the back of that person. So it's like our comfort level with how to handle the risks involved with driving. That's what makes us so comfortable with the act of driving. You know, I guess it's the fact that other people are on the road that, you know, probably represents the greatest risk to us all. Because that's something that we can't control. We can't account for that other than just how we react. And, you know, our reactions are not guaranteed to be successful. But nevertheless, you know, we do, I think, take comfort in just knowing that we do have some sort of control because we know how to handle certain situations. And at the end of the day, when we talk about financial planning and, you know, again, comparing that to driving, financial planning is really no different. You know, feeling like you're in control basically has everything to do with, okay, how am I going to respond if this happens? Or how am I going to respond if that happens? And it's by knowing that you've built that confidence, which leads to your comfort. But like I said, the general point that I would aim, you know, to kind of hammer home with them is just the simple fact that we have to understand that risk and chance, when it comes to finances, just like basically any other aspect of life, they're going to be there. And so it's always a matter of, number one, being able to accept that, but then use that in how we approach, you know, or how we address those kinds of things. At the risk of telling you something that you already know, technically speaking, nothing has a 0% chance of occurring. And just to put a little more definition on that, a 0% chance means that something is absolutely not going to occur. Now, we can certainly have a discussion, and I wouldn't necessarily disagree that there are some things that are very unlikely to occur. You might even say that, yeah, you're pretty much committed to the idea they're not going to occur. And that's fine. That's fine. Everybody has their own hierarchy of issues, you know, that they need to consider when they're making financial decisions or putting their financial plan together. But the fact remains that there are plenty of examples of, let's say, threats to our plan or risks that we need to acknowledge when we're making decisions, that while they might not have, let's say, a great chance of occurring, the chance that they will occur still remains moderately above zero. You know, we might be talking about something like in the 20 to 40% range, something along those lines. The reason why this is significant is because I've certainly had the occasion to meet with folks, and when certain topics come up that kind of fit that mold. So we're talking about a topic or an issue that might have something like a 20 to 40% chance of occurring. It is not always the case that an individual's planning acknowledges that or takes account of it. Now, that's not automatically problematic, but it could be. And let me tell you why. If we have not accounted for or even just acknowledged the possibility, the real possibility that a certain event might occur, then that means we're basically setting ourselves up to be surprised later. And if we're surprised, that means we don't have a plan. And if times are uncertain, if we're feeling uncertain, and if we're feeling like we don't have that control that we want, then something like that is not going to help. But let's talk about a few examples within the financial realm of where uncertainty or chance rears its head. At the mere mention of that, I think a lot of folks might immediately think about investing, and certainly that's true. But what about some of the other examples that we can point to? So I mentioned investing. You know, that's an easy and obvious example. You're dealing with chance and probability just in terms of the performance of the underlying investment. But, you know, looking at death or life insurance, however you want to frame the topic, you know, none of us are guaranteed tomorrow. So there's certainly some chance built into that. I think long-term care is another good example. You know, that one's kind of an interesting topic because it's always funny. I think the statistics are something like, you know, for the folks who are, I don't know, 65 or older now, there's like a 70% chance they'll need care, something along those lines. But, you know, the funny thing is that most people put themselves in the 30% group, you know, the group that won't need care. How you determine something like that, I don't know. But, it, you know, the point remains that there's a fair bit of chance involved with that. But most of the time, people, it's almost like they look at it as there's 0% chance that's going to happen. I think our minds really at the end of the day have a difficult time dealing with chance and probability. I don't think, and I'm just speaking from experience, you know, here and conversations I've had, but I don't think most people grasp what chance and what probability really mean or what they really are. And, you know, there's a great book by Nate Silver that's called The Signal and the Noise. And it's basically all about that, you know, and all about the decisions that people make that in retrospect don't really make any sense. But one of the interesting examples that Nate Silver brings up in the book is going into the 2016 election, Hillary Clinton had something like a 70% chance of getting elected. Donald Trump had like a 30% chance of getting elected. And lo and behold, Donald Trump got elected. And he said, you know, well, the response to that was that all the models were wrong, you know, that they were using to analyze the election and predict and so on and so forth. But his point in response was, you know, 30% is not nothing. You know, 30% is still a chance. 1% is still a chance. So the fact that something has a chance, you know, the best way to understand that is that it remains possible. And we can't take, you know, to use the Clinton and Trump example, we can't take 70% and round that up to 100, you know, because if we do that, then we have to acknowledge that we're simultaneously taking 30%, we're rounding it down to zero. And we're introducing certainty where certainty doesn't exist. I think it's important to introduce that idea that folks have a difficult time with chance, because it's all, I guess, all about acknowledging the realities of what we're dealing with. You know, for instance, I think most of us know what a phone is, and most of us know what a phone does. But if somebody didn't and they picked up a phone, they wouldn't have a clue what to do with it. And it can be the same concept or the same idea playing out when we're dealing with financial planning. If we don't understand the nature of the beast that we're dealing with, we're not going to know what to do with it. We're not going to know how to respond when things maybe don't work out the way we expect them to, that kind of thing. So there are certain realities, certain facts that we have to acknowledge about what it is we're dealing with. I guess you could say that, you know, that lend themselves to any comfort we might feel, with engaging and planning or investing in or buying insurance, whatever. And I say all that to say this, which is there's always an element of chance in just about anything we do with financial planning. But again, going back to what we were talking about with driving, the simple fact that chance exists in financial planning doesn't mean that we shouldn't, engage in it. We shouldn't do the best we can because we do it with driving, on a daily basis. I'll tell you one thing that I have an appreciation for is the potential difficulty involved in basically determining what it is that you do control, what it is that you don't control. Sometimes I think we have a way of thinking about things or describing things as if we have control over them, but the reality is that we don't. In determining what conditions you control, what conditions you don't control, a good test to apply, to see whether or not you're actually in control is simply to ask the question, can you choose the state of the condition? And for instance, if we're talking about investing, can you choose how well the economy is doing? No, you can't. So that's obviously not within your control. But let me give you an analogy that I think might help with kind of fleshing this out a little bit more. So you think about using an ink pen. I think, everybody recognizes the fact you pick an ink pen because you got something you need or want to write. So you pick up the pen, you go to use it. But, think about it from the standpoint of what you're actually controlling in that situation. It's just the manipulation of the pen that you're controlling. So picking it up, holding it a certain way, that kind of thing. You don't control whether there's ink in the pen, whether the ink is still wet, whether it's dry. You don't control whether the ball, if it's a ballpoint pen, whether it's going to roll. I mean, on and on and on. For such a simple act, all those other components represent chance that you might not actually or might actually be able to write with it. So, we can look at it. We can say, well, yeah, we have control over the pen and being able to write with whatnot. But even then, we have to think about the fact there are other things involved that we absolutely do not control to be able for us to be able to reach the outcome we want, which is to write with the pen. Out of that, an important point, I think much like the driving example, the fact that there are other components involved and those other components involve a degree of chance, it doesn't mean that we don't reach for the pen when we need to write something. We still pick it up. We still give it a shot. We don't treat it as if it's not worth it. So I guess generally I would say what I would say to that is, just because there's an element of chance that's introduced doesn't mean you shouldn't give something a shot. And again, we prove that day in and day out with the activities and the decisions we engage in. In fact, it's precisely because chance exists that planning is proven necessary. But why is that? Well, it's because outcomes aren't guaranteed. An absolute guarantee means something is unconditional. In other words, no other condition needs to be in place. Nothing else needs to be addressed for a guarantee to come to fruition. So it is precisely because outcomes are not guaranteed, and thus we are left to deal with chance, that our considerations need to include various scenarios and contingencies, and that especially includes what can go wrong. Now, I've certainly seen my fair share of folks wrestle with decisions. In fact, I've seen plenty of people look like one of those folks who are frozen, standing on the edge of a bungee jumping platform or at the door of a skydiving plane. And that might seem a little odd that I would use that as an analogy, but let me tell you why it's applicable. The folks who freeze right before they're getting ready to jump, well, that means they haven't made a decision. So just like we were talking about earlier with conflict, you could say that their options to either jump or not, they're still competing. Because if they had made a decision, well, the evidence of that would be the fact that they jumped, or that they step back from the edge. Now, going back to what I said about chance being a difficult matter to grasp, difficulty with the concept of chance can certainly be a factor in leading someone to freeze in the decision-making process. Matter of fact, some might recognize the phrase paralysis by analysis. The way I kind of look at that, it's almost like you could say that when somebody is paralyzed in the analytical phase of a decision, the momentum, just in terms of proceeding toward a decision and through a decision, has come to a halt. And it's almost like that momentum, the energy behind that momentum has shifted. And the momentum behind just consuming as much information as possible has increased. Now, sometimes I don't know that a person realizes that's what's going on. But I think if we're being honest, sometimes that's a strategy aimed at delaying having to make a decision. Regardless, the most important aspect to acknowledge, in my humble opinion, about that type of a scenario is that it's definitely a sign that there's something we're not comfortable with. And we need to understand that. And we need to flesh that out. Now, it's a bit ironic, but I think we can say that someone who finds themselves in that position may very well be guilty of overlooking something important about chance. And that's the simple fact that chance is not a one-sided coin. In other words, the way we've been discussing chance so far has basically been from a negative perspective, or from the perspective that a particular event that has a certain probability assigned to it will cost us. The reality is, though, that if chance is involved in a negative outcome, then it's also involved in a positive one. So let's take the simple example of the pen. You know, you could look at that and say, you know, well, somebody could go through the process of checking the ink, you know, is there ink in the pen? Is it wet or dry? Does the ballpoint, you know, roll? Whatever. Somebody could go through that process, you know, I guess before they attempt to write with a pen. But I mean, that, I guess, depending on how far you go with that, how much time is that adding? And is that really worth it? You know, because we know at the end of the day, if the pen doesn't work like we want it to, well, that's okay. We'll just throw it away, pick up another one, you know, and chances are good. And there's that word chance again, but chances are good that we're going to find one. The very next one, most likely, is going to work for us. From that standpoint, you know, what I would say about chance and breaking things down and worrying about every single little component is that, yeah, you could analyze it and you could get into it. You could really get down into the weeds and whatnot. But the simple fact that there's chance involved means that at the end of the day, you ultimately don't control the outcome. But again, we continue to pick up that pen, or we continue to get behind the wheel of a car, because most of the time it just works out. And so it's like chance is complementary to the control that we take. And so, you know, if we continue to write with pens, if we continue to get behind, you know, the wheel of a car, I guess a question I would have is, why do we accept the risk or the fact that there's chance involved there? You know, and we're essentially agreeing to experience that chance, but maybe some folks don't do it in the financial arena. You know, if a pen were not to work, or if, you know, we were getting into an accident, I mean, I've gotten into, you know, plenty of accidents over my time. Only one that I can think of was actually my fault, but, you know, being in plenty of accidents and experiencing plenty of pens not writing. Yeah. I mean, it didn't ultimately defeat, I guess, my use of pens or my driving of cars. You know, the fact that something doesn't work out, and things won't always work out, you know, but we got to be okay with that. You know, and we have to understand that tomorrow's a new day. You know, the next pen's a new pen. If our car's been totaled, the next car's a new car, at least to us. You know, so the fact that we remain and all is not lost has to serve as the foundation for saying, okay, maybe we need to regroup and look at things and take a different approach.
To give you a practical example in the financial arena of this in action, one of the things I like to say is that when we invest, we should invest like a farmer. To be clear, I'm talking about the role basically, that a farmer plays. So it's the process that he or she engages in. What investing like a farmer means is, you know, if you think about a farmer does not have direct control over whether a plant grows or not. Okay. He or she cannot walk up to the plant and either, you know, throw something in the soil or talk to it and say, grow. It doesn't work that way. So what a farmer actually does, and this is not nothing but, you know, a description based off of observation, but a farmer takes stock, let's say, of the environment, you know, dealing with water, nutrients in the soil, things of that nature, and makes improvements or amends the environment as needed to try to create the best opportunity for that plant to grow. And that's what it's all about at the end of the day for the farmer, because that's all they can do. You know, but even, you know, you talk about amending the soil as an example. I mean, you get enough rain and that can deplete, you know, the soil of nutrients. It can wash away, you know, whatever you've put down on the ground, that kind of thing. But, you know, the farmer, they're going, like I said, to take stock of the environment. They're going to make amendments, changes to the environment as they see necessary. Obviously all aimed at getting a plant to grow, as well as possible. But at the end of the day, they don't control directly that process. And investing is really no different. You know, investing is all about understanding, an individual investment itself. Say, you know, we're talking about like a share of Walmart. Yeah, we're going to evaluate not only the company that is Walmart, but we're also going to evaluate the business environment or the economic environment and understand, okay, Walmart might be in a good position now, but what about, you know, sales for, I don't know, a particular segment of, you know, retail items they sell. Maybe that's been a hot winter for them, and maybe that's more of a cyclical kind of thing. And so it's starting to fall out of favor, you know, something along those lines. We have to understand those things and not just simply assume that Walmart or any other company is just going to keep trucking along. I mean, you think about, you know, again, the farmer and taking stock of the environment and making amendments as he or she can. They are, in essence, controlling what they can control, but they're relying on chance. And you can say that with the farmer, you know, they're planting that seed, they're making their amendments. It's not like a farmer would ever say, well, I'm either not going to plant seed or I'm not going to, you know, amend the soil or whatever. You know, a farmer would never say that and then also expect to get the growth out of his or her crop that she, you know, might expect. We know it doesn't work that way. And you can say that's analogous to wanting to invest, expecting that your investment will grow to, say, $1,000 after the first year, but you never invested the first dollar. You know, what that proves is you have to do something. You have to do something. So you can't expect, you know, just to I guess, get the outcome or the expectations that you want while you sit back and just kind of, you know, watch things play out in front of you. You have to be a participant. You have to engage.
If we're talking about engaging, then we're basically talking about responsibility. And responsibility, or at least the attribution of responsibility, could be a funny thing because just like I talked about with the 2016 election, chance can basically cause us to err or erroneously assign responsibility to something or someone, including ourselves, when in actuality, we need to either understand that something else is responsible, or that just because of how dynamic the issue at hand is that we're dealing with, I guess you could say we need to acknowledge that there are multiple variables that we could say are responsible, or at minimum, we can just simply say that we can't pinpoint one thing as being responsible. And again, to pick on investing, that's one of the areas where I observe this occurring most often.
If you're responsible when things go well, you're also responsible when things don't go well.
you can't have, you know, let's say two different ways to look at responsibility. It's either all yours or it's not. So looking at it from that perspective, you know, I guess, great, pat yourself on the back. But at the end of the day, the reality is, as we've been talking about, there's so much chance involved, you know, and it can be just 1% chance. That the point remains, there's still chance. I think it's also important to establish, if we're talking about investing specifically, one of the things I like to mention to clients is, you know, if there was one manager who proved they could capture most, if not all, gains and protect against most, if not all, losses, there would only be one manager because everybody would want to, you know, invest with that one manager. But the fact that there are so many managers out there, and there are a ton, that proves the point that no manager has figured that out. So if no manager has figured that out, why would we ever think that we've figured that out? And if we are willing to acknowledge that we haven't figured that out, well, then maybe we shouldn't be so bold to say that we are responsible for, you know, the outcome that's resulted. You know, it's really no different than the pen. I mean, you talk about, you know, other things being involved that have an element of chance. I mean, investing certainly has a ton of them. You know, but if we don't, at the end of the day, ultimately control everything when it comes to simply writing with an ink pen, there's no way that we can control everything that comes to fruition, you know, with investing. Now, we've already talked about the fact that chance is not a one-sided coin. So in other words, it's involved in both positive and negative outcomes. Something that I can use the topic of investing to demonstrate is that our approach to planning should be conducted from the perspective of managing risk, not reward. And as strange as that sounds, you'll hear in a second, you know, what I mean by that. But nevertheless, if we do approach our planning from a perspective where we're trying to manage risk, then that's going to mean that the best way to evaluate the effectiveness of the decisions we make and the strategies we adopt it's going to be on those same terms. Just to use a cheap example, someone who has a portfolio that is diversified across multiple asset classes and chooses to compare their performance to the S&P 500 over a certain period of time shouldn't get disappointed if the S&P 500 has outperformed them. The simple reason for this is different asset classes perform differently. But when you compare a diversified portfolio to the S&P 500, it's like you're saying that all asset classes should perform the same. If diversification resulted in identical performance across asset classes, then that would defeat the purpose of diversification.
You know, one of the fundamental principles that I think people overlook about that is that you don't want all of your investments to perform the exact same way. You know, the fact that some fail while some succeed is actually a sign that diversification is working, as ironic as that might sound. Because if everything performed the exact same way, that would be akin to putting all your eggs in one basket. But that would also mean that at the same time that everything fell, or one thing failed rather, well, everything else is going to fail because they're all performing the same way. And I guess what that probably highlights as well is that diversification is a strategy aimed at ultimately mitigating risk or washing it out to a certain extent. It's not about trying to build the best portfolio for the sake of reward. And I could actually use that to introduce another idea, which is, you know, when I talk to people about investing, and I ask them questions around comfort from time to time, the responses that I'll get will be more along the lines of how much reward they can tolerate, not risk. And when you're investing, it's all about approaching it from a risk perspective, you know, risk tolerance. Now, I'll say this, and this is a joke that I often will make in front of folks like that. But, you know, I don't know anybody who couldn't tolerate as much as reward as possible, as much as you could throw at them. I don't know anybody who would get sick of it. But I know plenty of folks who can't tolerate, you know, but a certain level of risk. So we discussed the fact that planning is necessitated because outcomes are not guaranteed. And ultimately, the reason outcomes aren't guaranteed is because conditions aren't guaranteed. So in other words, we can't promise or we are not promised that anything is going to be of a certain nature or a certain status at any given point in time. What that fundamentally means is we're dealing with variables. We're dealing with things, just in terms of how we quantify them or qualify them. They can be this or that. They can be anything at any given point in time. But this is where we connect the dots between variables or conditions and chance. So to put it simply, the fact that we have conditions or the fact that we have variables that we're dealing with, that's where chance gets introduced. But something else that I think is pretty important to acknowledge and insightful, quite frankly, is just how ubiquitous or universal chance is in our day-to-day lives. So I think it's important to acknowledge, you know, when we're talking about conditions, it's not just important to understand that, you know, conditions basically lay the foundation in large part for whatever outcome, eventually results, but they also create essentially the need or the motivation that explain why we act in the first place. And to me, an easy example is someone choosing to save or invest. You know, some folks might look at that and say, well, they're saving because that's just what you do. You save. Well, no, actually, they're saving because they don't already have enough saved. So it is the condition of having a lack of savings that has created the motivation to save. And I would just, I guess, generalize or summarize that by saying, I think it's conditions that motivate us 100% of the time to do what we do. Even something as little as shifting in our seat. Well, we shift because we're uncomfortable. If we were comfortable, we wouldn't be shifting. So it's always a condition that we're responding to or we're reacting to. And that's the motivation behind our decisions. Those conditions, I mean, we're not in control of those either. So even the element of chance is involved with us having the motivation to act in the first place. The final point that I would make here in closing would be just to emphasize the importance and the value of experience. And generally speaking, what I'm talking about is acknowledging that experience can teach us that even when things don't work out, we can still be okay. I'm very confident that I'm not speaking out of line when I say that all of us have had that experience. You know, in the course of this podcast, we've talked about how we can use writing with an ink pen to learn some lessons there. We've used driving and a couple other analogies. So just be sure not to be too quick to dismiss the experience that you do have. And specifically in the context of this conversation, don't dismiss just how much chance you've already encountered in life and you continue to encounter on a daily basis. But in those scenarios, we still make decisions. We still see things through. And so when it comes to finances, we can carry that lesson with us and we can say, if we were willing to do it in those situations, probably no reason for us to act any differently when it comes to finances. Well, I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Taming the Financial Chaos podcast. Just a quick reminder that you can find more information and resources about my practice online at principles with an L-E of financialplanning.com. That's principles with an L-E of financialplanning.com. I hope you will join us next time. And until then, take care and stay healthy.
Securities and investment advisory services are offered through Lincoln Financial Securities Corporation, member SIPC. Insurance is offered through Lincoln affiliates and other companies. Lincoln Financial Securities and Principles of Financial Planning are separate entities. Lincoln Financial Securities and its representatives do not offer tax or legal advice. Individuals should consult their tax or legal professionals regarding their specific circumstances.